Okay, I was going to play a little game with the audience. It was name the next speaker, but I have a feeling I don't have to go too far with my clues and you'll recognize this person. The speaker was born in the 40s and raised in Alabama. She spent, you can call out whenever you know the year. Angela, yes. She spent some significant time in Paris making links with other international students and fighters for freedom. The speaker is a truth teller, and for telling the truth, she was fired as an educator at UCLA. For speaking the truth, she was jailed as an activist and the leader of the liberation movement. And I can go on and on. It really does go on for several pages. But I'm going to stop now and welcome Professor Angela Davis.
Good evening. It's really wonderful to see that so many of us have come out this evening to renew our commitment to free Mumia Abu-Jamal. And I want to say that it's a real honor for me to be speaking on this platform with people like Pam Africa and Michael Franti and Lynette Wineglass, and I'm absolutely excited to be able to meet Reuben Hurricane Carter for the first time. As I reflected on what I would say this evening, I thought that I would begin by acknowledging how much and how frequently we underestimate our collective power. I thought about how this sense of powerlessness is instilled within us, even as we are encouraged to consider this country we inhabit, the United States of America, as the heart of democracy. And of course, the recent debates between the Republican and Democratic candidates are supposed to provide us with incontrovertible evidence of that democracy. But I want to ask you, was the death penalty evoked in any of those debates? Did any of the candidates ask us to consider what the fact of 2 million people behind bars means for the practice of democracy? Did any of them ask us to think about the shifting of social resources from education and healthcare and housing to prison construction and prison operation and the creation of a force of public and private police and prison guards? Did any of them suggest that there are proportionately more police, public and private police, in the United States and probably in any police state characterized as a dictatorship or as a fascist nation? What we are learning this evening about the conditions surrounding the case of Mumia Abu-Jamal, and I was really moved to hear his son, Mazi. Some of you know I had the opportunity to meet with Mumia about almost exactly a year ago, I think it was. And I was totally amazed at how much he evokes the spirit of his father. Yes. You know, in the way he looks and the way he speaks and his reflective... Well, anyway... What I was saying was that, you know, what we are learning this evening is infinitely more important than the inane political jostling we witnessed during those official debates. And of course, this evening, we have here palpable evidence of the possibility of victory, because we have with us the real Reuben Hurricane Carter.
Thank you.
who is free, as Christina pointed out, because there were people who never gave up hope. And unfortunately, Geronimo Gijaga Pratt is not with us this evening, but I received a message on my voicemail just before I came asking me to let you know that he's not here because of illness, but that he is here in spirit. And wherever he is, he will continue to fight for Mumia's freedom. And of course, Geronimo is palpable evidence of the possibility of victory. He is free because there were people, including many of you here this evening, who not only never gave up, but who diligently organized and worked for his freedom. And as you know, he was recently awarded a multi-million dollar settlement. That is palpable evidence of victory. And I also want to evoke the freedom of the Puerto Rican political prisoners and prisoners of war. Let us not forget how long we fought for them, and that we must continue to fight to free the remainder of the Puerto Rican political prisoners who are behind walls. And Laura Whitehorn is free. But what is different about this moment? What has changed since we last gathered en masse to remind ourselves of our duty to free Mumia? First of all, many more people are now willing to associate themselves with the campaign to free Mumia. The labor movement is rising up. Thank you. And especially the ILWU, who closed down the docks. The teachers union, SEIU. Although Judge Yon has refused to accept the amicus briefs, many people around the world know that members of parliament in Britain, all the progressive legal organizations here in the U.S., and many other organizations in this country and internationally have officially gone on record calling for a new trial. I believe that our movements have helped to create a different climate and have introduced new critical perspectives which have forged public conversations that are very different from what they were 5 years ago during that first great mobilization to save Mumia's life, and even different from what they were 2 years ago. 2 years ago, public sentiment regarding the death penalty could be represented as overwhelmingly positive, although we know that many of the surveys were skewed in such a way as to invite the kinds of answers that could be construed as supportive of the death penalty. But today, it is no longer possible to argue that the death penalty is widely supported. The work that Reuben Carter does on wrongly convicted people has been greatly legitimized by the recognition that death row is also a place of innocence. And therefore, the call for a moratorium on the death penalty is no longer considered a demand only posed by the left. However, some of our most prominent spokespersons tend to argue that there should be a moratorium on capital punishment until we can be guaranteed that there are no more innocent people on death row. But hold up for a minute. Let's think about that. A moratorium on the death penalty until the death penalty can be administered with justice? What is that all about? We need to answer them with a call for a permanent moratorium. In other words, abolition of the death penalty. The state needs to be deprived forever of the power to kill. The state needs to be deprived forever of the power to kill. It will thereby be deprived of the ability to carry out racist executions, and therefore also one very important aspect of the execution of racism. I only have about 2 more minutes, so I'm trying to get it all in. What we generally think of the death penalty is that it is death by gas, or death by electrocution, or lethal injection under the direct orders of the state. But other prisoners who have only been sentenced to prison also suffer a death penalty. Look at the women's prisons in this state, and you will see many women with HIV and AIDS who are deprived of adequate health care. You will see women with brain tumors who fail to receive medical help because the prison conveniently forgets to send their medical records along when they are transported long distances to hospitals where newer surgeons are available. You will see women who should be given compassionate release so that they can die at home, condemned to die inside the concrete and razor wire. You will also see women who have been condemned to spiritual deaths because they have few allies in their struggle against sexual violence behind walls. And as a matter of fact, 2 weeks ago, I met with women students at St. Mary's College who were supporting a student in her lawsuit against the college because she was raped on the campus and the college did not provide safe circumstances for her education. There are also imprisoned women in Michigan who have filed a similar suit against the state of Michigan for its failure to provide safe conditions of incarceration. These women were also raped. 3 weeks ago, I had the opportunity to visit Mondo Waylanga in Nebraska State Prison. He and his co-defendant, Edward Poindexter, have been in prison for 30 years. And I thought that visit would be depressing. But after spending 2 hours with him, I felt more energized than ever. I felt very much like I felt after I spent the time with Mumia. They have not given up. He and Mumia do whatever they can, for example, to express their support for Leonard Peltier and to call for a pardon. And of course, there are scores of political prisoners still behind bars, including Marilyn Buck and Linda Evans, right here in this community. The view from the inside is one of optimism. Mumia is hopeful and energized, so we should be optimistic and committed and empowered because we can make a difference. Now is the time to stand up, to say no to violence against women, to say no to racism, to say no to homophobia, to say no to the death penalty, to say no to the prison industrial complex. And we must relearn how to say no together, how to stand up together. Unity is a very precarious thing, but if we ever needed unity, we need it now. Thank you.